Some subjects we take up on the JX require more careful pronunciation than others. That is certainly the case with the book we will talk about this hour. It is called Mother Trucker, a memoir. The title character is a trucker, Joy Wiebe, who worked a hard road in Alaska and died on it in 2018. That was just a few months after Amy Butcher, the author of the book, met Joy in person and joined her on a journey up that dangerous Dalton Highway. We learn about the road, but also about the insides of the two women in Amy's book. Amy Butcher is a director of the creative writing program at Ohio Wesleyan University and obviously does plenty of her own creative writing. Her essays have been published in many outlets, and she is also the author of Visiting Hours, out in 2015. Amy Butcher, thanks for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thanks so much for having me, Jeffrey. My pleasure to be here.
It is a pleasure to have you. The first paragraph in the author's note, you tell us that Joy Wiebe died before what was to have been your second trip together. How hard was it to write this book?
Absolutely difficult. When I began this project, I really envisioned it as a research project in which I'd profile Joy over many, many months. You know, at times I considered over a year. And certainly her life was tragically cut short on the highway that so many have called the most dangerous road in America, which is one of the things, of course, that brought me to Joy, but also took Joy in the end.
I pointed out earlier, this is not the ice road of TV fame, but is just, it's a road, it's on solid land the whole way, but it's a pretty awful, crumbly highway.
Absolutely, absolutely. It is an incredibly treacherous drive. It is 414 miles of occasionally pavement, but most largely gravel, and it is oftentimes one lane. There are no police call boxes, no buffers, no shoulders, no metal guardrails. You really do this drive at your own risk, and yet, of course, thousands of truckers drive this road annually, delivering everything from infrastructure supplies to creature comforts to the oil field workers of Prudhoe Bay, Alaska.
Yeah, roughly from Fairbanks to Prudhoe Bay, is that where it goes?
That's exactly right.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So Joy was all about working through tough conditions, but what conditions in your own life prompted you to reach out to her in the first place?
Absolutely. So I was enduring at that time in my life something that was, I would never call it an abusive relationship. I used very codified language, but I was in my first abusive relationship. Predominantly, this looked like psychological abuse, emotional abuse, verbal abuse, and physical intimidation, although it had not yet escalated to the point of physical contact. And so I used sort of this codified language when talking about it with friends and family, but really wasn't willing to kind of identify squarely with what was happening. Joy was in many ways an escape for me. I found her on Instagram, which is, of course, how so many of us find new interests, and really felt compelled to contact Joy, and I wanted to write a piece about her because she seemed so incredibly fearless and brave and operated in this wholly, really male-dominated industry. While there are, of course, female pilot drivers on this road, meaning women who drive pickup trucks to sort of warn about oncoming loads, Joy was the only big rig driver who drove the road consistently for 13 years, 2 to 3 times weekly. And so I was fascinated with her. I was fascinated with the photos that she posted and the way in which she seemed to move very confidently through the world. And I felt like she had something to show me.
She did indeed. She's got something to share with the rest of the world, and I'm glad we get to know her in here, and I wish she was still around to share more with us. And then you had issues you needed to deal with as well. The story is not just about Joy, not just about you, but also about women, you tell us. And you talk about the way that we forgive. Do women forgive too much?
I think so. I think in our culture there is obviously there's a very silent epidemic of domestic violence. It is an epidemic rate in this country, and I think so often there are many women like Joy and like myself who operate with two personas. There's, of course, the public-facing persona, and then what so many women have to deal with often privately, often secretly, for many reasons, not the least of which is shame, and also the idea that it would be difficult for many reasons to escape that particular relationship.
I realized by the end of the prologue that I had read it twice on separate days. It's an awful story, well told. I couldn't put it down, but I mean, sketch out the broader observation of threats to women in the USA.
Absolutely. So through writing this book, essentially I pursued writing about Joy largely because of the industry in which she operated and the way that she seemed to have crafted out a life for herself. But increasingly, you know, as we spent time together in her truck cab navigating this very dangerous road, our conversations turned inward to what made Joy pursue this line of work. And of course, it provided a financial security net for her should she have to leave her marriage, which was abusive, and her first marriage had been abusive. So for Joy, it really was an act of necessity. She was also a deeply spiritual woman and talked quite a bit about how she felt much closer to her God on this highway, so tucked away from mankind. And I think that there's something to be said there. This conversation, as I continued to write the book and do research, I found that 1 in 4 women in America will be affected by severe intimate partner violence, and 1 in 9 men. And of course, the rates are much higher for LGBTQ individuals as well as BIPOC individuals. So really, the book kind of takes a broader exploration of what it means to be in a relationship where there is violence, where there is abuse, but also ways in which women empower one another. And in many ways, I felt inspired by Joy to make very crucial changes in my own life.
Until a few years ago, in your mind, was this an "it happens to other women" thing?
I don't think I had any idea how prevalent this really was. I operated, as you very kindly noted, at a very small private liberal arts college. Professionalism felt like a very integral part of my identity, and I felt a lot of shame about the fact that secretly I was in this relationship in which I was often, I think I write in the book, you know, belittled and bulldozed and condescended and made to feel very small and weak and scared. And I think it's a very unfortunate reality that crosses many identities and many sort of markers of identity, but is something that I think so many women in America know intimately well.
We will get into the details of what went sideways in your relationship with a man you call Dave in the book. You do point out you have changed some names for the sake of privacy. The book is called Mother Trucker, subtitled on the cover, Finding Joy on the Loneliest Road in America. That would be Joy Wiebe, the mother trucker of the title, handling herself on the Dalton Highway in Alaska. And that is where Amy Butcher traveled with her just a few years ago, and Joy died on that highway just a few months later. We'll come back to the story about Joy and about Amy and about women more generally when we come back to talk more about Mother Trucker. You can join us by phone and email when we return to the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 25. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of JPR, I'm Jeffrey Riley. Our guest is Amy Butcher, who directs the creative writing program at Ohio Wesleyan University and obviously does plenty of her own writing. Her latest book is about her own journey to find something in herself that she lost, in essence. It was in a relationship that had turned abusive, and reached out to somebody who she thought could help, and reached out to a truck driver in Alaska named Joy Wiebe, who drove the dangerous Dalton Highway and ultimately died on it a few months after Amy took a trip on that highway with her. Amy's book is called Mother Trucker, a memoir, also subtitled Finding Joy on the Loneliest Road in America. Joy, obviously a double entendre. You can join our conversation on the Exchange by phone, 800-838-3760, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. We already pointed out that James W. Dalton Highway is not the ice road as in the TV show. And in fact, Joy recommended you not watch it. Amy, why?
She did. She kind of laughed about it. She said that for many people, you know, the idea of trucking in Alaska, automatically individuals think of this really classic TV show. But her argument was that it was wildly sensationalized, that a lot of the antics on the show had been sort of perpetuated by producers. And she also felt as though they didn't depict in particular the women who comprised this line of work. At the time, she joked that oftentimes they would hire very attractive young female truck drivers from what she called at the time lesser routes, which simply meant, you know, obviously easier, less dangerous, less treacherous roads. As she told me, she kind of laughed and said, I'm no spring chicken. I'm 50 years old and I'm not much to look at, but I know the highway better than I know my own hand. And I thought that was really funny.
Well, you know, it's interesting. This is not the first job she had in a male-dominated industry. She had actually been working up closer to Prudhoe Bay, hadn't she been?
Absolutely. She had worked for many, many years at Fort Knox Mine, essentially driving bulldozers and then later sort of washing a lot of the equipment. For her, it was very important to keep her Saturday Sabbath, and so a lot of her work revolved around the idea of making her own schedule or otherwise having the freedom in which to practice her faith, which, again, was very deeply important to her.
Well, you know, so her inspiring you from afar is one thing. When you reached out directly to her, what kind of response did you get?
You know, I would imagine when I placed the call, I thought, you know, you miss every shot that you don't take. And I wholly imagine sort of a laugh and an absolutely not, to say nothing of maybe a more terse response. Instead, Joy really just laughed and said, sure, why not? And within 2 weeks, I was meeting her in Fairbanks, Alaska. And the thing about it is, I think at the time I thought that this was so, you know, unique to the situation that perhaps she really was hungry to tell someone her story. And that was, in fact, the case. But I later found out after her death, she really was this person to everyone, incredibly open, incredibly generous, and wanting to give of her time.
And talk about that first moment in her presence, though. I mean, it's one thing to trade, you know, phone calls and then text messages with someone. And boy, those are really exuberant texts. Thanks for sharing those. But talk about actually seeing the Joy Wiebe.
Sure. It's another thing altogether. You know, I think any time that you meet someone that you've built up a level of anticipation and excitement and eagerness, there's really no way of predicting how that actual face-to-face contact will go. And, you know, my first moment with Joy was her hopping out of her, you know, Ford F1 pickup truck. It's bright red in the parking lot of the Fairbanks Hotel in which I was staying. And she jumped down and grabbed my shoulder and hugged me to her. She was a very petite, small woman, smaller even than I'd imagined, incredibly thin, and really just the smallest thing and full of personality, full of life. And that really was true of Joy. She was really fiercely energetic and dogmatic about everything that she really pursued in life.
Your sojourn with her gave you time and distance to think about what you needed then. Reflect on that and your status as you put it, exactly the sort of woman that American society is comfortable with.
Sure. As I mentioned, I mean, I really was, I considered myself an incredible professional. I think I, you know, certainly believed that I was a feminist. I taught a number of classes at Ohio Wesleyan where I currently teach, and really considered myself to be independent and strong. I had been raised, you know, largely by parents who encouraged this behavior. And yet privately, I really felt tethered to this individual who his behavior was increasingly erratic and hostile and abusive. And yet I think in a lot of ways I believed, and I believe many women believe this, that it was a temporary, you know, way of treating me. I believed that the relationship would get better, that we were simply going through a weak period. And I think in a lot of ways I kept this private because I worried what it might say about me. And I also, I think I wasn't yet comfortable with the idea that I was in an abusive relationship. I talk in the book about the idea of a hierarchy, and I think oftentimes in our culture, when we think of physical violence or we think of an abusive relationship, we sort of go to that worst-case scenario. And because mine wasn't yet there, it felt in many ways that I was sort of making mountains out of molehills and that it was something I could privately endure and should endure.
Amy Butcher is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Her book is called Mother Trucker, a memoir. It's about her time spent in Alaska with the late truck driver Joy Wiebe. At least one friend warned you against going to Alaska. I mean, does it seem like you were subbing one set of dangers for another?
Absolutely. You know, what drew me to Joy is the fact that she drove a highway that has been called repeatedly, you know, the most dangerous road in America, the loneliest road in America, and the most isolated road in America. Joy had warned me ahead of time that there were any number of dangers that we would encounter, not only in terms of climate or geography, but also animals. The fact that there is no cell phone service, the fact there are no police or patrol vehicles. You can easily plummet off that highway and drop thousands of feet to your death. So yes, I think there was a lot of concern that I was trading one fear for another. But at the same time, I felt compelled to the fact that Joy knew this highway better than most anyone else. She had done this drive, you know, 2 to 3 times weekly for 13 years and had been obviously safe the whole time. Later, I would find that she was called the Hall Road Angel by other truck drivers for the way in which she would often save them from dangers, from anything from a blown out tire to kind of going off the road. This was who she was. And so, yes, I think there was a really dangerous or a sense that I was in great danger. But the truth is, and again, I write this in the book, I felt much safer on that highway with Joy than I ever did in my own home. And I think so often we think of, you know, women especially going out and having an adventure, and we consider the outside world, you know, the most pressing danger, when really in 90+ percent of the cases, it's who are sharing women's homes, these interior spaces that present the most danger.
Let me come back to that number you cited before. 1 in 4 women will know partner violence of some kind in their lifetimes in America.
Absolutely. And I think that rate is also severe partner violence, to say nothing of what we might consider, quote unquote, you know, lesser violence. I'm not sure, you know, exactly what that entails. I think, again, our society operates in this way that there is a hierarchy, and we think of physical abuse. And what I was experiencing was largely physical intimidation, you know, being backed into corners, being made to feel afraid and submissive. And I think that that's something a lot of women know very well.
Let's come back to Joy's faith. You've mentioned it already in passing and talked about how important it was for her to keep the Saturday Sabbath. She was a Seventh-day Adventist. Give us a broader sketch then of her beliefs and how central they were to who Joy was.
Sure. They were everything to Joy. She really believed, you know, when I got there, Joy was really adamant that God had brought us together. She said that she felt closest to God on this highway, and that she felt very deeply compelled from the moment I called her to me, and that essentially that we were meant to be together. Repeatedly throughout the trip, I mean, at least a dozen times over the span of a few short days, she told me that God had brought me there to tell her story. And I think as a writer, there's a certain appeal in that, and there's a level of feeling that that's some compliment. But I think especially in light of the fact that we did this journey together, Joy shared so much of her life, not only in terms of the industry and her trucking, but also what she was enduring and had endured throughout her life in terms of her relationships and her partnerships. And I think there's something there that not only did she share this with me and really get through to me about what I was looking at and the fact that it wouldn't get better, that so often it doesn't. And abusive relationships really just often escalate. And then, you know, a few short months later, she passed away. And I think in many ways, I owe my life to her. I write about in the book, you know, I really do believe she saved me. I believe that the wisdom that she imparted on me is absolutely crucial to the fact that I am now out of that relationship. And I think in writing this book, it's my broader desire to share that sort of insight with others.
To the point of her faith, I mean, and her enthusiasm. I smiled as I read your recounting of her texts. They were to you, but they were to God as well.
They were. She often did prayers through texts. And, you know, I was raised in a sort of agnostic atheist home. You know, I did not go to church. I didn't believe in God. And at first I sort of thought, you know, as a writer, you sort of just go with whatever the subject is offering you. You know, you smile and you make the most of it because you're trying to learn this individual and certainly respect them. And yet I have to admit, over the course of our friendship, not only on that drive, but then in the weeks and months that followed through emails and texts and voice calls, I have to say, you know, there was something about Joy's enthusiasm and her steadfast belief that this was God that I don't know how to shake or how to grapple with.
We are talking to Amy Butcher, who is the director of the Creative Writing Program at Ohio Wesleyan University here on the Jefferson Exchange, about her own recent book, Mother Trucker, a memoir. It is about her encounter with the late Joy Wiebe, who drove the Dalton Highway, the most dangerous road in America, in Alaska, for a living. And at a time when things were at a low ebb in Amy's life, she reached out to Joy and said, "Can I come with you on a trip?" And she did. And therein is the guts of the book. But there's a lot more here, not just on the road, but also inside both women that really is well revealed as we go through. You can join our conversation with Amy on the Exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Let's come back to the man that you called Dave in the book, with whom you were having a relationship that was turning dangerous, scary. You did not end that relationship to go to Alaska, though, did you?
I didn't, no. I really was, you know, dipping my toe into the world of getting some distance and clarity. I think so often when women find themselves in abusive relationships, there's this idea of you're constantly around this individual, and it begins to shape the way that you view yourself and the way that you view the world. And so I knew only that I needed some time away and that I needed to be around someone who I think I thought might empower me and embolden my decision making, and that was Joy.
Well, writers have to write. I mean, that's clear. But talk about the process of revealing your vulnerabilities to the world, which you do in spades in this book.
Sure. I never envisioned that this project would have anything personal to do with me. You know, when I began this book, I was sort of joking that it was my strong female book, and it was a profile of Joy. I envisioned that it would largely concern the road, the trucking industry, and all that Joy was. I never could have imagined that Joy was also privately enduring, not her first, but her second marriage to an abusive partner. And I think the more that Joy shared with me, with the idea of, if you're going to write this whole profile of me, it needs to be dimensional. We need to share what has made me strong, and we need to more importantly, share what I do to continue to provide for myself should I need to escape once more. And that was really important to Joy in profiling her. And increasingly, I think as I began to write about her own story, I realized that for all the differences between us, we shared this very fundamental common thread. And again, I think it's a thread that so many women share. And so increasingly, the project became not only an act of literary journalism and profiling, but memoir as well. I felt it was important to kind of contrast, you know, for all of the differences between us, this thing that we both had in common.
It sounds like Joy recognized something in you that she felt in herself. Did she ever say that explicitly?
She did, absolutely. She started to call me her little sister and soul sister, with the idea that, you know, Joy had just turned 50, I had just turned 30, and there were, you know, these 20 years of experience between us, or sort of dividing us. But Joy really said that she saw much of herself in me. And I felt that in some capacity, I saw some of myself in Joy. I saw the way in which she kind of placated and did her work and kept herself very professional, but also privately was dealing with something that created insurmountable stress and anxiety. And it was something that I knew very well. And so when Joy, you know, when I eventually confided to Joy why I was really there, not simply to write about her, but also to get some distance, that's really when our conversation took a turn. It became very important to Joy that I learn from her and that I get out, because as she put it, she didn't want to see me where she was 20 years later.
Mm-hmm. It turns out that Joy, for all of her tough person living on the last frontier, is actually not an Alaska native. Far from it. Where is she from, and was she from, and how did she end up in Alaska?
That's absolutely right. Joy is from the deserts of Arizona. She was from a small town. She attended a one-room schoolhouse in Arizona, and yet from her, you know, really early days of childhood, always imagined moving to Alaska, and it became a lifelong endeavor. She eventually got there when she was in her 20s. By that point, she had had two sons with her first husband, and wanted to move to Alaska, and did, made it her lifelong goal. And she said she never really understood why she was called to Alaska, but again, that was something that she owed to her God. She really believed that this was a place she was meant to be, and it's a life that she carved out for herself quite beautifully.
It's a bit of a surprise when you reveal in the book that you had some previous connections to Alaska, and that is actually where you met Dave.
It is. All things come around. I have been teaching for the last decade at the Sitka Fine Arts Camp in Sitka, Alaska, which is a really wonderful nonprofit arts education camp that covers arts of all genres, music and drawing and comedy and really everything. And that is where I met Dave. You know, Dave was also a fellow teacher, really believed in the power of the arts, and it's where we met and first fell in love.
So how perfect a match did he seem at the time?
I think, you know, the way that these things often work is he was incredibly charming and charismatic, loved by everyone. You know, I write about in the book, there are a lot of things that he did and demonstrated that made me feel as though I was safe in his capacity. I think, once again, we have sort of a cultural idea of an abuser as someone who is often, you know, hostile, aggressive, violent all the time. And on the contrary, my partner was incredibly devoted and lovely. He taught young people. He believed, again, in the power of the arts. And really was a delight to be around, although increasingly I began to see these blips of violence, of abuse, of anger, and they were often, you know, very contained within our own home and our own personal life. And then we'd go out and he would be the same charismatic person to others. So, you know, while they remained sort of isolated at first, these moments began to mount and really became a crucial part of our relationship after that first, you know, largely lovely year. Shortly after the murder of Gabby Petito just a few months ago, I wrote a New York Times op-ed largely about this, the way in which, you know, we presented to everyone else, not only on social media, but in our real life, as quite happy and content and adventurous. But privately, I was enduring quite a bit of his abuse and his emotional, verbal, and response to his own stress in his life.
So you knew what you were coming from and knew it wasn't good and that it probably had to end at some point. Contrast that with how you felt going into the unknown with Joy, who you had practically not known either.
Sure. Again, I mean, in the 2 weeks between talking to Joy and heading up to Alaska, I received a lot of, you know, concern, not only from family members, but friends as well, who, you know, when you say that you're flying across the country to meet a stranger from the internet, I think that raises a lot of red flags. Yeah. And yet, at the same time, you know, very few people knew that, that the danger that I was facing in my own home was causing me to worry about my well-being, my safety, my viability. I think, you know, in that year, I was in my first and second year of a tenure track job at a wonderful college. And in many ways, I had an incredible amount on my plate. And this relationship was, again, something that I endured quite privately. Very few people knew about the extent of his violence and his aggression. And that really made it easy for me to commit myself to this trip, because in many ways I felt, again, more at risk in my own house than I did with the idea of meeting this woman. I also had this idea that, you know, we would be on the highway and there would be others, certainly other truckers kind of passing through. And in many ways, I didn't know what to expect. I only knew that in many ways I felt called to it, which again, Joy would later claim was an act of God.
So the landscape itself, we'll come back to the interiors after this next break, but how alien did the landscape look to you as you hit the road with Joy?
You know, the Dalton Highway is wild. You begin, you know, as if it's a stretch of pavement that extends between, you know, forests, and very suddenly everything drops out. It becomes gravel, one lane in places. We went through, you know, deep canyons and over steep mountain passes. At times there were summits that, you know, you could easily, the truck could roll back or go to the side or bite into the shoulder and you would plummet several thousand feet. We passed, you know, avalanche shotguns in which, you know, there are timed avalanches to ensure that an avalanche doesn't happen unexpectedly when a trucker is on the road. And then eventually we hit ice fog, which is essentially when fog itself begins to freeze and crystallize. And so the drive was incredibly, you know, foreign to me. At times it looked like the moon. Everything became flat and white. There was no more shrubbery or trees. And everything sort of just dropped away. It was beautiful, but also, of course, that beauty hides incredible danger.
Indeed it does. That is the Dalton Highway in Alaska, where Joy Wiebe worked and lived and ultimately died when she did hit a soft shoulder just a few months after Amy Butcher met her. And their experiences together is the core of the book Mother Trucker, Finding Joy on the Loneliest Road in America. Obviously, double entendre and finding joy in both senses of the word. We'll come back to the conversation with Amy Butcher. You can join in by phone and email when we come back to the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 20. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thanks for listening. Our guest is Amy Butcher, the director of the creative writing program at Ohio Wesleyan University. She is a person holding a tenure track position and a person of great respect in the community, and just couldn't believe what was happening to her in her own relationship, where things were turning gradually more abusive. She needed help. She needed a person. She needed a mentor. She needed a friend. She needed a big sister, and sought out the trucker, Joy Wiebe, in Alaska, who drove the most dangerous road in America, the Dalton Highway. And their experiences together just a few months before Joy died on that highway are called Mother Trucker, Finding Joy on the Loneliest Road in America. You are welcome to get into the conversation with us as we talk not just about Amy and about Joy, but also about women in abusive relationships much more generally. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Let's come back to your relationship and some of the underpinnings of what went wrong there. I mean, Dave, as you call him in the book, had some firm beliefs on sex, and things went differently from what he originally intended. Talk about that.
Absolutely. So when I met Dave, he was waiting for marriage, which was certainly not something that was in any part a part of my life. Again, I had been raised without faith and thought that sex was a healthy and crucial part of any relationship, intimate partnership. But increasingly, I think we, despite our many differences, political, religious, among others, I think we had a shared admiration for one another, and it really made us appreciate our companionship. I wrote at one point in the book that Dave was both the kindest and the cruelest man I've ever met. And that dichotomy is really difficult for someone who hasn't been in an abusive relationship to understand. There was always both. There was both the anger and the abuse, and there was the outrageous kindness. And oftentimes I would call it sort of his grand gestures, which meant that essentially after one of these outbursts of abuse and violence and sort of psychological and emotional onslaught, he would commit himself to doing something incredibly kind for me, something that, you know, my friends found envious in many ways. And so increasingly, the more time we spent together, you know, Dave committed that he was in love with me and really wanted to have sex. And shortly after we did it, it really became this onslaught of abuse that I endured, largely because of, I think, his fundamentalist background of faith and also the way in which he perceived God as someone who punished and judged, which was very different from Joy's own sort of sense of God and religion as well.
The things he said about sex and sin, would you have taken that from anyone else?
Never. I think, you know, the fact that I was in this relationship was really baffling to me in the sense that I had never been in a partnership with someone who was so fundamentalist, and yet I fiercely loved this person. I knew his heart. I believed that in many ways, you know, when he came to me and said, let's have sex, to me, it was a step in the right direction. It was a step towards a more, you know, adult and healthy relationship. It was something that certainly I wanted, but also felt that he would want as well. And he did want. And really shortly thereafter, our relationship became, again, sort of this, I had this sense of Jekyll and Hyde with him. And I write in the book, I never really knew which version of him I was coming home to. There was a person who would hand-press tortillas in my kitchen, laughing and playing music. Or there was this person that would say really outrageously cruel and unkind things about my body and my worth in this world. And that was really difficult for me to square because there was never one without the other.
When you got together with Joy, then it didn't take you guys long to talk about relationships, did it?
Certainly not. And I think, you know, one of the things that was so important to me in writing this book was to cast light on the fact that both Joy and I operated from a largely privileged place. We were both white women. You know, Joy was very financially independent through her job as a trucker. And as a professor, you know, I had the ability to take a week off from work. It was our spring break and fly to Alaska. And so I think one of the things that I really want to be careful about in not only writing the book, but talking about it was the advantages that we had from the get-go. The more that I wrote this book, the more that I learned about the ways in which, obviously, identity markers make it much more difficult for women of color to leave abusive partnerships. For that reason, women of color often face much higher risk of intimate partner violence, and it also, again, makes it much more difficult to get out of those relationships. One of the things I never struggled with was the sort of currency of belief, as I call it, which is essentially, you know, the second that I told Joy or I told others eventually about what I was enduring, I was automatically believed. And that's a luxury and a privilege that so many women don't have, to say nothing of the financial resources or even access to those resources. Writing about, you know, Alaska endures one of the highest rates of intimate partner violence in the country, and yet it's largely perpetuated against Native and Indigenous women who very rarely see justice or have access to those resources, much less credibility. So it was really important to me in writing the book to be aware of that and to shine a light on that as well.
There's a moment between you and Joy on the road when she says, you know, sometimes I think women are better off alone. And it seemed like a little silence followed that.
Yeah, you know, I think it's really difficult. And in the years after that trip with Joy, you know, I write about this in the book. You know, I flew home and I was, you know, slowly that relationship over the course of the next few days dissolved. And I think in my head, there was this moment of she had empowered me and I'm going to fly home and end this immediately. And it didn't happen that way. I think so often it doesn't happen that way. It took a few days. And it in turn took a week or two. But essentially, you know, I shortly thereafter was able to find myself free of that partnership. And once again, I shine a light to the fact that I was safe in leaving. I had no way of knowing what would happen. And I'm very grateful that, again, the relationship didn't escalate further. But to be out of that relationship now is a wholly different thing. And in fact, again, I think it's so important that part of it for me was getting away and hearing from someone who had been through this. who was really in the trenches, not her first time, but her second time in a marriage in which there was an abusive dynamic. And that was very important for me to write about.
It's really interesting. Nobody who experiences this story, either here or in the book itself, can avoid recognizing that it was a person who felt his faith strongly who was causing problems in your relationship. And it was another person who felt her faith strongly who really, really helped you get your way out of that relationship. I mean, it's really interesting to think in those terms.
I would agree with you. Absolutely. Again, I think I was really resistant to the idea of faith. And when I first met Joy and she shared how much God meant to her and even the fact that she felt God had brought me to her, you know, I kind of laughed and sort of secretly rolled my eyes at the idea because religion was really the last thing that I felt like exploring or talking about or dealing with because of the abuse that I was enduring in my own home because of this sense of faith. But on the contrary, I think Joy represented so much of what I had been told faith was and could look like. You know, this was a woman who was incredibly generous and open and kind, loving, and really believed that everyone was accepted and should be accepted. And, you know, she modeled in many ways what faith could look like without fear, without torment, without oppression and anger. And I really owe that to her. I think she modeled so much of what I wanted to see from my own partner.
She hasn't changed your own groove, I'm thinking. It's a little hard to get out of that agnostic atheist path, I think.
It is, and yet, of course, the number one question I think I received in writing this book was, where do you stand now? And I don't know how to explain that I really do believe what Joy told me. I don't think that people come into our lives. I think at times people come into our lives to shape us, and I don't know what to do with the fact that Joy so substantially changed my life and then vanished from this earth. I also think it's telling that she passed in a way that she was ready. You know, when I asked about the danger of the highway for her, she was adamant that, you know, she would be ready when the time came and she couldn't wait to meet her God, which was, of course, part of her faith. And I don't know how to square that with everything that happened. I think that sometimes there are things that we can't explain, and I'm okay with that. If anything, I find that sort of beautiful.
Yeah, it's hard not to think of her as some sort of angel who entered your life and then was gone, what, 4 months later?
Absolutely. And as a writer, you know, you're always thinking about those sort of scaffolding or metaphorical ideas. But it really was quite simple with Joy. I think even the fact that so many truckers called her the Halberd Angel, the fact that now on that highway there is a statue in place of an angel with an inscription dedicated to Joy, I think it's really unavoidable, both as a writer and as a human.
To the point of domestic violence and men who act out their frustrations or whatever else they're feeling. And you get us a good bit into the book before you reveal that you had known several men who acted upon their anger.
It's true. Yeah. I mean, beginning first with my college, my senior year, about a month before my graduation, I had a very close male friend walk me home, wanted to make sure that I got in safe. It was a small town in Pennsylvania. And yet, of course, that sense of chivalry is really lovely and welcome. And, you know, he made a joke about a canine store that sold, you know, little tuxes for tiny dogs, and made sure I got in and went home to his own apartment, and about an hour later had a psychotic break and murdered a young woman, a fellow classmate, a 19-year-old. And that was the subject of my first book, really this sense of grappling of how in the world could this happen? How could someone make a joke and walk me home and have that sort of forethought to ensure my own safety and then commit himself to something so in many ways unprecedented and completely unfathomable. And so that was the basis of my first book. And again, since that moment, I have continually found myself in the book I write about, you know, the circle gets closer each time. I think in many ways that changed my understanding of what was possible in relationships, what was certainly possible between men and women. And it's in many ways been sort of an anchor to a very dark sort of undercurrent of our society that we don't often talk about. I think exploring that was very important to me.
Let's take a phone call here. I want to welcome Mark and Burnt Ranch onto the exchange. Welcome.
I'm with you?
Yeah.
Well, I was just wanting to comment that I was raised by a very strong woman, and my father was present, but she didn't take any grief from him, and she raised us with due and great respect for women, both my brother and I, and I have a hard time fathoming why a man would want to be abusive to his best friend. That is just one of those things that I have never been able to understand. Because I like to be supported, I like to be loved, and I like to be held and touched and coddled and all those important things. So where does the mindset come from? Does she have any idea how a man gets to that point where they want to be abusive to their best friend who is there to support them in every way? I don't comprehend that.
Yeah, I appreciate the lack of comprehension, and I appreciate the call, Mark. Thanks for bringing that in. So where does this go? You mentioned a psychotic break in one of those cases, but that's not the case in all of them, by a long shot.
Yeah, I'm so grateful, Mark, that you called in, and kudos to your mother for raising you in that way. I think that's fantastic, and I love your outlook. I think for many men, it comes from a place of power. You know, I think, at least for my partner, there was a sense of power in dominating me and making me feel small. I also think, frankly, that so many men lack coping mechanisms to deal with anger. And, in many ways, I think that's a problem of our society, is that we continue to encourage men to kind of bottle things in and to not show emotion because emotion is weakness. But certainly that's no way for anyone to live. So certainly in my feminist literature classes, I talk about, you know, the role of feminism is deeply important for men and for women. It's really encouraging a sense of equality and also encouraging men that there is no right way to be a man, that feeling emotion, expressing emotion, and dealing with those emotions, stress, anger, heartbreak, all of those things are vitally important to being a healthy and functioning individual. So I really think it's a sense of power that many of these men feel that they have over women in these relationships. And I also think it's a lack of having the tools and resources to properly express themselves and express their emotions.
Well, yeah, we're not the only people talking about this. It was Senator Josh Hawley who said recently something about masculinity being denigrated in America. Is that the problem, you think?
I think certainly, yeah. I think that there are many ways. I think increasingly, you know, the women that I know, so many of the women I know at my age range have children, and it's very important for them. You know, they begin from a really early age of teaching their boys to express themselves, to feel emotions, to take charge over their emotions. And again, this idea of naturalizing, it's normal to feel these ways. It's about how do we handle it from there. There's a really wonderful writer who talks a great deal about this, Robert Bly, a poet, and he talks about, you know, women, when they get in a fight or have a stressful moment, go to one another and share and talk, which is certainly what Joy and I did, whereas men sort of go outside and kind of kick the garbage can. And he's making a joke, but I do think it speaks to a larger, again, sort of cultural idea of what is and isn't permissible based on, again, sort of the gender that you're born with.
Joy said a lot of things to you in a short period of time. And again, you know, 4 months later, she was gone, hitting a soft shoulder and rolling her tank truck. And I was watching some of the TV news coverage about, you know, I'm sure this happens every time there's a major wreck, but it seemed bigger with Joy. Like, what can we do about the Dalton Highway? But of all the things she said to you, is there any one thing that rings out above all?
I think, you know, the thing that I most want women or anyone really in an intimate partner violence sort of situation to know is that it doesn't get better, that these things are not permissible. That I think oftentimes women feel that it's their job to endure it, or they want to endure it with this sense that things will improve. But the truth of the matter is what Joy really stressed to me is that abusive relationships like this, they don't get better. They really only escalate. And I think one of the side effects of being in a partnership like this is you begin to whittle down your own sense of self-worth and what you deserve. And that really became, for me, a very intoxicating idea. Again, I handled myself quite well in a professional capacity, but at home, in many ways, I felt like I deserved it, that I was so unworthy and my own treatment and ideas of the world were flawed. And that can be really dangerous because it makes it even harder to get out and to escape.
I hope you have inspired other women to think in terms of what they might be enduring, any person actually enduring in a relationship when they're getting things they don't want. Amy Butcher is the author of Mother Trucker, Finding Joy on the Loneliest Road in America. Joy Wiebe, not with us anymore, died later in 2018, just a few months after Amy met her. Thank you so much for sharing the story with us in the book and here on The Exchange.
This was my great pleasure, so thank you so much, Jeffrey.